You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
If you look at the two West divisions, there are two totally different stories. I am Allison Slitter from MLB.com, and in the American League West, it appears to be a two-team race at this point between the Mariners and the Rangers, whereas in the NL West, it's totally open. The best teams have 500 records, and the Padres are 2.5 games back, and they're in last place. So that division seems to be wide open. Let's talk to our reporters about that. My goodness, where do we start? Well, let's start with something that actually did not shock me too much, and that's that Jed Lowery is on the disabled list. I'm not saying that because I think it's funny, but it's not uncommon for Jed Lowery to be on the DL. Such a valuable player when he's healthy, which is why when these things come up, it's a bummer, right? Offensively, he's been carrying his weight.
Yeah, I mean, he's been one of their most consistent guys, especially with guys on base, one of the better hitters in the league with guys on base. And I mean, the poor guy's been on, I think this is his ninth trip to the disabled list in, you know, he's been around for about 7 seasons. Just kind of crazy. And all really just spook things. Like, this is the product of him fouling a ball off his foot. And so he's got it's a really bad contusion. You know, usually hear contusion and you think, oh, well, it's just a bruise. But bad enough to where they knew that they would be out without him for at least a week. You know, maybe just no baseball activity for an entire week. So, you know, after that, then there's, you know, getting him back into things, getting him, you know, swinging a bat again, doing all those types of things. So it really just made sense for them to put him on the DL, you know, and bring in someone who can help them in the present. And really unfortunate just because it's such a tough time. It seems like everything that can go wrong is going wrong for this team with all the injuries. I mean, the woes going on with the pitching, particularly the starting pitching, the losses piling up, just a really just a bad stretch for them overall. And this is kind of one of those things that's just, you know, compounding it.
Yeah. So we need to talk about the pitching situation. Sonny Gray, my goodness. Between Sonny Gray and Sean Manaea now also having experienced his really bad outing. And that's going to happen with a young pitcher, by the way. So usually they come out like gangbusters, have a couple really good outings, and then teams figure them out a little bit, and then they have to make adjustments. This was just a drubbing, though. So Manaea gave up 8 runs over 2 2/3 innings recently in a loss to the Red Sox. We'll start with that. Before that, it seemed like even when he gave up a handful of runs, like the pitcher said, outside of a handful of pitches, he was outstanding. I guess Stephen Vogt said it. So there's still a lot to be looking forward to with him, correct?
For sure. I mean, this is just, I mean, you know, they're also running into a lot of hot-hitting teams. First, they go through Baltimore. Now here in Boston, it seems like the Red Sox 1-9 are just, you know, killing the ball. And we've seen that 2 nights in a row. And Manaea, the thing for him, his first 2 starts, he was typically able to get through the order, you know, 1-2 times okay. And it was that third time through the order that was hurting him. Last night, it was just from the get-go. And, you know, he thought he was pitching more in than he was, and really he was just pitching in the middle of the plate the entire time. His sinker was flat, just didn't have the changeup, and, I mean, just his fastball was getting destroyed. I think the talk, you know, last night, especially on Twitter and just listening to everyone, the Hanley Ramirez home run, I mean, just an absolute monster shot. And it was kind of, it felt like it was like that. Every ball that was hit was just destroyed off him. And it's one, I think, one of those off nights. And of course it's magnified when it is, you know, someone like Sean Manaea who comes in and top pitching prospect in the organization and expected to be dominant from the get-go. And some guys are, but some guys, it takes a while. It takes an adjustment. And I think it's also hard for a young guy to make those adjustments, you know, in the middle of the game when it's all happening so quickly. I mean, it really snowballed very quickly on him last night. And I think there was no time for him to make those adjustments. And he said after the game, he didn't want to use that as an excuse, but, you know, he's going to use it as a learning experience. And he was very stand-up after the game. Wasn't you know, down, you know, really wanted to take the positives from it. And I think that's really what you want to see from a young guy after a game like that.
Yeah, and then we move on to Sonny Gray, who quite frankly should be having games like that, and he is. So I was kind of, you know, I read some of the quotes after his start against, I think it was the Mariners, when he said, you know, the positive you can take out of it is that it's the best he felt all year. He gave up 7 runs and 11 hits in that in a loss. And then his next time out, I guess it was, I don't have how many runs he allowed, but it was the first time that he's allowed like 4 runs in 3 straight games. So when do we start pushing the panic button on him?
Yeah, I think his next start's important. You know, you look at this 3-start stretch, he's never had a stretch like this, not just in his big league career, but in his life. I mean, the guy has just never failed at anything. You know, the 2-sport star growing up, football and baseball, he's just that guy that's good at everything, and he's never gone through something like this. And, you know, when it's also happening at a time when this team really needs him to be that stopper, and you know, you can't even rely on Sonny Gray. It's troubling, but at the same time, you know, I was talking to him today, and he was taking me through those 3 starts, and he said, you know, the first one in Detroit, he only went 2 innings, he did 60 pitches, and he was like, I didn't have it that day, and that happened. And that start in Seattle you were talking about, he still stands by, you know, what he said, that he felt like he had his best stuff. He thought it was the weirdest start he's ever had. He's like, you know, usually you pitch into the 8th inning, that's a good thing, and then you look at the final numbers, and there were 7 runs, and that's all obviously not so good. But he really felt good, and, you know, so listening to that, you would have expected maybe to see better numbers, you know, in his most recent start. And he doesn't see anything in particular that's going on. The velocity's there, the movement's there. So he said he's not going to think too much into it. He's not looking for certain things. He's not a video guy, really. He doesn't want to drive himself crazy. He just kind of wants to keep pitching like himself, and he thinks that if he does, the results will be there. So maybe this is just one of those stretches where, you know, a handful of bad starts are clustered. And I mean, he did go through kind of a rough patch last year, but it was at the end of the year. The team was already out of it, and I think it was just a little easier to overlook it. But again, like, things are magnified when the team is going through such a rough patch, and they really need him to step up. And also, you know, you look at the numbers too. I mean, it's so early in the season that your ERA is kind of all over the place. And right now, his is at 6, which is by far the highest it's been in his career. And he's just trying to not look at the numbers per se, and just kind of keep going out and, you know, stay true to who he is. I know he was talking to David Price in Boston today. It's one of his really good friends. And I think they text each other a lot, just saying, you know, stay confident, you know, be yourself, stay calm, don't get, you know, down on yourself. And I think that's really what he's trying to do, just keeping that positive attitude. And maybe it sounds cliche, but I think for a guy like him, that mentality is so important during a time like this, just because he hasn't gone through it. You know, so I think for him to, you know, he sounded genuine about it too, just trying to stay positive. So you know, we'll see his next start. I think, you know, after that, if we see the same results, then of course more questions are going to be asked, and they've already been asked about his health, and everyone insists he's fine, so that's the good news. But you know, obviously if the results aren't there, then the concern is going to be there eventually.
Yeah, especially since it's like, if he was scuffling toward the end of last season and then he's having a bad start to this season, I mean, you do have to start putting 2 and 2 together and wondering if it equals 4. You know, I mean, there's, I guess, some red flags there, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, and it's, I mean, this is a guy that, you know, you want to be careful with. And you talk about health concerns, a lot of guys don't think there are. And, you know, then you look at someone like Chris Bassett, who for, you know, the first month of the season, you know, thought everything was fine, and he just underwent, you know, Tommy John surgery. And I'm not saying that Sonny's case is, you know, anything like Bassett's, but you just never know. And Sonny's also never really dealt with arm injuries. So if there is something going on, maybe he doesn't know, but you really just hope that this is one of those stretches that is going to be put behind him, and, you know, we're not talking about it for a long time.
I'm here with Tierra Sullivan, who is actually in Round Rock, Texas, to watch Yu Darvish make a rehab start. So it looks like the media contingent is in the minor leagues today. So, TR, what should we be looking for from Darvish? How long is he expected to pitch tonight?
Yeah, Allison, this is his third start. He is down for 4 innings and 60 pitches, I believe. Probably has 2 more after this. He's looked good so far. The velocity's up. He's still trying to hone the secondary stuff. He's got the wipeout slider, a couple other pitches he'd like to be better at, the curveball. But basically right now it's just building up pitches and building up arm strength and building up endurance. And maybe by the 1st of June he'll be an option at the major league level.
Rangers have to be excited about that. The way I describe it is they're making a midseason acquisition for a Cy Young contender without having to give up anybody. So that really puts them in a really pretty awesome position if he comes back successfully, which we anticipate. That's going to be a huge boost for the Rangers.
Yeah, I mean, he was second in the Cy Young Award a couple of years ago, so you're right. He's definitely that kind of a pitcher. Of course, you don't know what he's going to be like coming off 14 months recovery from Tommy John surgery. You know, the new thing now with Tommy John is you give him a couple extra months. It used to be a 12-month recovery. Now people are opting for 14 months, give him extra time to build up, and hopefully the return is a little smoother and he doesn't take as much time to, you know, get back to 100%. He's pretty close right now, you know, against minor league pitchers. Of course, he hasn't faced Mike Trout yet, so we'll see.
Right, that's true. So let's talk a little bit about the major league team. Winners of 5 of 6, they moved 5 games above .500. I mean, good times are rolling. They've come from behind in 4 of their most recent wins. Just everything seems to be going right, and I like this stat that I read in one of your stories. So they're leading the American League with a .305 batting average with runners in scoring position and 2 outs. Last year, they were hitting .205, so a 100-point difference in the same scenario. That's so telling about the difference, what's going right for them this year, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, that's been huge. You know, Beltre's been very good in the middle of the lineup, and, you know, Fielder's driven in some runs, even though his batting average isn't up there, and Mitch Moreland's coming around. But obviously the guy that's really helped him is Nomar Mazara. He's come up from here in Round Rock to the major league level, replaced Shin-Soo Chu, and has just done a tremendous job, hitting over .300 with power, hitting all fields, taking some walks. He's been a huge boost for that lineup so far, and I think that's been a real catalyst for the Rangers.
Yeah, so they moved him into the third spot in the order for the first time. Ian Desmond into the second spot, and Prince Fielder hitting 5th. And, I mean, you made a note of this because that's like the most recent batting order. It seems to have worked, obviously. What did Bannister do like last year, for those of us that weren't watching every game? But did he kind of shuffle lineups, or did he try to stick with 1 or 2 that look sort of similar and try to ride it out? What's his sort of philosophy on that?
His philosophy is to construct what he calls constructing a lineup every night. And he's not afraid to make changes based on the pitcher, based on who's hot, who's not, to maximize his lineup. And I think what he wanted this time around was, you know, some athletes at the top of the lineup, Rougned Odor and Ian Desmond hitting 1-2 and getting them on base. And, you know, Mazara, he felt, could handle the number 3 spot. And the obvious objective was to get some traffic on the bases for Beltre, Fielder, and Moreland. And that's what happened yesterday. You know, Desmond and had a couple hits, and Mazara, I think, was 2 for 2 with a walk and a sacrifice fly. So, you know, lineups change. Guys get hot. You know, 2 or 3 weeks from now, he can make it something different. You know, but what Bannister does is he puts a lot of thought each day into the lineup and how to construct it and how to maximize against whoever they're going up against.
Greg, I don't know where to start. When I was trying to figure out, I started making my notes a few days ago. So Robinson Cano was recently named Player of the Week. And so let's start there. He hit 5. I know it's been a few days, but a .516 average during that time, 16 hits and 31 at bats. I mean, just insane. And so I guess we should start with him if we're going to talk about what is going right with this team. He certainly is holding up his end of the bargain.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of what they've done starts with Robinson, and he's been as good as you could be for the first 6 weeks of the season. And the fun thing is that the contrast, I guess, with last year's start is just so stark that I think people forgot how good a baseball player Robinson Cano is, and he's certainly showing it now, and it's made a huge difference. I mean, he's a difference maker, and everybody knew it, but when you kind of see it playing out in the field, you're reminded just how good he can be and how, when he's on a roll like this, what it means to a team. So it hasn't been just Robinson Cano, and that's why they're winning, but he's certainly been everything they would want from him. He's leading baseball in RBIs. He's leading the American League in home runs, and been hot as heck with the average recently as well. And he went from I think 236 up to about 305 in the span of a week. And that's a pretty good week. It's early, but to make that big a jump early just tells you how good he was. And clutch hits, big hits, just kind of carrying things. And it's been fun to see. And defensively as well, Allison. I mean, he's just feeling good, moving around. And people, I think, forget what a good defensive player he is. And he makes things so easy. But he's one of the better second basemen in the league. And they've been really good defensively up the middle, and that's been a big thing, too, with Ketel Marte at short and Leonis Martin in center and Chris Iannetta behind the plate. A big factor as well that people aren't talking about a lot, but he's a big part of that as well. So just he's a good ball player and definitely off to a great start.
Yeah, when Chris Iannetta hit that walk-off home run in the 11th inning, so the Mariners sweep the Rays with that home run, you have to start thinking they have to start feeling like maybe – There's nothing that they can't do. There's no lead that they can't or deficit that they can't overcome. Just everything. When things fall into place, it's amazing how contagious that can be.
It is it's a fun feeling, and you get it once in a while with the team. And I've seen it. I remember Baltimore a couple of years ago. It's just they got in a close game, and boom, something happened right. It harkens back to the Mariners, honestly, in '95 when at the end of the year when just. Different guys that step up different days, and so this is early this season with Seattle, and it's been a while since a team has felt like this in the Pacific Northwest, where just things are feel right, as you say, and Dejo Lee, a couple home runs, they come back from an 8-4 deficit to win in Oakland, and Ketel Marte with an unbelievable game the other day, and 3-run homer to win, and he's not even a power guy. He'd had a great game up to that point with his speed, and then all of a sudden he comes up and cracks a 3-run homer, and Iannetta with a walk-off last night. We just keep seeing different guys stepping up in different ways, and Cano kind of doing it all the time, and Seager heating up now. So, yeah, they've got different guys stepping up, and that's when you become a good ball club, and they have. I mean, they're, I think, 5-1 in extra inning games, and just kind of doing the things you'd hope for. Keep winning series like we've talked about and finding ways to do it, and it all adds up to a first-place ball club.
When you were looking at this team during the spring training, I remember being at Mariners camp, and, it looked like there were a lot of decent parts. I mean, they added some pieces that were going to help them. But did you – and we're still very early, so anything can happen over the course of the season. But I didn't get the general feeling, just from the writers, broadcasters, that this was sort of where they – thought that things were going to go, that the Mariners were going to, catch fire and really come together that easily, or that the talent level was there so much that this was going to happen. I mean, did you have that feeling coming out of spring training, like this could be a special team?
No. I mean, everybody thought that last year. Last year was going to be the year that everything fell together, and people were picking them to be the World Series contender a year ago. They were kind of the chic pick to be the pick last year for early in the season, and I think largely because of that, people backed off him this year, and Poto made a lot of moves to make a team a more of a team around the big guys. Last year they had those big guys with Cruz and Cano and Seager and Felix, but didn't really have the base below that. And Poto said, "Hey, we got to raise the floor around those guys," and that's not quite as spectacular when you look at it. It doesn't seem that dramatic, but when you add it all up, that's how you win games. Have 1-9 and the lineup and a rotation that's 1-5 have been very, very good. That is how you play winning ball, and maybe we all slept on that and kind of didn't catch on and how good the pieces were. But that's why they're a great story. I mean, you get surprises around baseball, and the White Sox are doing it, and the Orioles have a good start, and,
And the Mariners, one of those teams that, they're just playing good ball early. Did we see it coming? No, I thought they'd be a playoff contender. I didn't see them racing out and jumping in the lead and in the division and making things this fun this early. But that is why it's a great story.
Well, Allison, the Angels are at a point where they simply just need warm bodies for their rotation, and that's not to short sell Julius Chacin, but they're kind of in a desperate state right now. Before Wednesday, they had a rotation made up of three starting pitchers in Jared Weaver, Hector Santiago, and Nick Tropiano. They're calling Matt Shoemaker back up from AAA so he could start tonight's game, Wednesday night's game against the Cardinals, even though he finished April with a 9.15 ERA, and they need one more starting pitcher. So they basically needed to make a move from the outside, and that's why they got Julius Chacin from the Braves today for a low-level minor league reliever. He'll probably start on Saturday in Seattle, which is the next time that the Angels kind of have an open spot in their rotation, and he will probably be in their rotation for the foreseeable future. The Angels have four starting pitchers who are out right now. Garrett Richards is likely to undergo Tommy John surgery. Andrew Heaney is hoping to avoid the same procedure. T.J. Wilson is out until at least the middle of June with persistent shoulder issues. And Tyler Skaggs hasn't been able to resume playing catch in about 3 weeks. So the Angels just need some arms. They've been linked to Tim Lincecum and Kyle Loesch. And even though they got Julius Chacin from the Braves, they're probably still looking into Tim Lincecum and Kyle Loesch. They need as many arms as they can get right now.
Yeah, and with Chacin, I mean, he's got – this obviously is not a core shaker here, but he's only 28 years old. He has a lot of major league experience, some good, some not so good. And so having experience, I guess, and not being on the wrong side of 30, I guess those are two things that are working in his favor. I mean, it's not like they're, you know, have a lot of time to be really selective about what they're bringing in. But at the same time, he has been there and done that a little bit, so that has to be a little bit of a comfort. At least maybe he'll be able to eat some innings, right?
Yeah, I mean, look, if you're an Angels team that has a very, very thin farm system, and it's still the middle of May, this is pretty much the best that you can hope for. There aren't teams that are really willing to give up any pieces so early in the year, and it's not like the Angels have anything to really trade from in their farm system. They got Chacin one day after they got Brendan Ryan from the Nationals because Andrelton Simmons is going to be out until at least the All-Star break with thumb surgery. So, I mean, you know, they're doing what they can right now. It's really hard to get outside help. Chacin was, you know, fans will probably remember him from his days with the Rockies. He actually had some pretty good numbers despite pitching in some very unfavorable conditions in Coors Field. From 2010 to 2013, he was one of their go-to starting pitchers. He dealt with a lot of injuries in 2014, and he bounced around with a lot of teams in 2015. And obviously, things haven't been going so great with him in 2016. But it seems like, you know, from the Angels' perspective, if they could just get him to kind of, you know, take his turn every fifth day and give them a chance, at least for the next month until maybe they start getting some guys healthier, that would be big. I think, Allison, not to jump too far ahead here, but these next 2 months are going to be crucial for the Angels because they've obviously dealt with a lot of injuries. They're struggling. They had lost 4 in a row and 8 out of 10 going into Wednesday. And in 2 months, it's going to be the middle of July, and at that point, the front office is going to have to decide, are they going to start building for the future, or are they going to try to keep winning now for the present? And that's going to be dictated a lot by whether or not the Angels can kind of keep their heads above water for these next couple of months. And, I mean, it's not going to be an easy task for them.
No, I'd like to put $5 down on the – not that I bet on baseball, but if I did, I'd like to put $5 down on how that's going to go in July. feeling like I might not be looking to, you know, stay in any kind of race. But
you could do better than $5, Alex.
I want to get back to Brendan Ryan really fast. So he got it for his defense. Obviously, this is another situation where they need to get somebody in there quickly after Simmons got hurt. But, you know, I heard some kind of chuckling with this deal. But, I mean, he is a pretty good defensive shortstop, right?
He's a very good defensive shortstop. That's what he's known for. I mean, he's actually, it's weird, he's actually kind of similar to Cliff Pennington. Solid defensive player, not a very good hitter. He's a great guy to have in the clubhouse. You know, if you have any experience with Brendan Ryan, anybody who's had him knows that he's a, you know, really funny guy. He keeps things light. He was in the Angels clubhouse for about an hour, and he was already breaking out his Robert De Niro and Christopher Walken impression. So I'm not sure if that's going to help the Angels win, but, you know, this is a very dark time for them, so at least they'll keep things light a little bit in the clubhouse. And he also, like Cliff Pennington, he was also raving about his pitching ability. He was bragging about how he threw two scoreless innings with the Yankees last year. And, you know, I warned them, I'm like, look, this is a manager in Mike Socha who in 17 years as a manager has never used a position player pitcher, even though he's had plenty of opportunities to do so. And he's like, you know what, we'll work on that. He, Mike Socha hasn't really seen my stuff yet. So, you know, maybe we'll get some of that going. You know, whatever could keep things light in Anaheim, I'm sure the Angels would welcome it right now.
This would be the Brian McTaggart who missed his flight to Boston because the Astros decided to play 16 innings on what we call a getaway day. So, Brian, first of all, were you able to reschedule your flight? And what was the atmosphere in the clubhouse after Marwin went deep to win that game for them?
Yeah, I rescheduled the flight. I'm at Fenway right now, so basically got delayed 12 hours. But, you know, that's why you try to get there as early as you can in case something like that happens. But, no, the clubhouse was it was a good atmosphere. And, you know, that was a big win just because they went from having a 500 homestand to a winning homestand. They went from losing a series to winning a series. And to fight and battle for 16 innings and lose and then have to come on the road and play a red-hot Boston team that scored 40 runs in their last three games, it would have been kind of deflating. And even A.J. Hinch admitted that afterwards. So that was a big win for a lot of reasons. You know, made the flight a lot better for them, I'm sure. And you know, now they're here with, you know, some good momentum under their belt and a chance to do some damage against not only the Red Sox, but then they go to Chicago. So they have two very, very tough teams awaiting them here. So if it was ever time to start playing great baseball, this is it. I mean, they played a lot better, but they could still play even better than that, and now would be a good time to do it.
So are there any concerns about the bullpen? I know they have some off days coming up, so is that I guess that makes it a little bit easier because they really had to stretch that bullpen yesterday in that game, and now they've got some pretty tough competition coming up, but I guess maybe with the off days that'll help them a little bit?
Yeah, they do, and, you know, they're still carrying 13 pitchers, so, you know, they have the extra arm down there, and they have, you know, Feldman, although he pitched one inning on Wednesday, he's a guy that can go multiple innings, and you know, who knows what's going to happen when McCullers gets activated for tomorrow. There's, you know, that'll be a roster spot decision that's going to be made, but they're going to go with six starters, sort of, for the next couple of weeks, but I don't think the bullpen will be a big problem, especially if they can get through the next day or so. Pretty easily. That being said, like I said before, I mean, the Red Sox are swinging it as good as anybody right now, so it's going to be a tough challenge, but they need Keuchel to go deep in the game and at least give some of the relievers a blow today.
Right. So A.J. Hinch recently said that they're going to use six pitchers. Maybe I'm just not understanding the difference between using a six-man rotation, which he says he's not doing, and just using six pitchers coming up for the next couple of weeks. So I guess is this like more because they just need to – I mean, it's really a good thing for the team because it means that nobody has worked his way out of the rotation. But with McCullers coming in, they're not ready to boot anybody out. So is this more of like an evaluation time?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, everybody was pitching so well. I think Devinsky was the guy that if he wouldn't have pitched well, they would have bumped him out. But, I mean, he was great. So there was really no one that really deserved to go out. And so it's a six-man rotation, yes. And the way A.J. said is that it's not going to be the same six guys over and over. I mean, Dallas Keuchel is probably going to stay on his normal rest. So guys will have to work around that schedule. I think McHugh will probably stay on his normal rest. So with a couple off days coming up, if they stayed on a strict six-man rotation, you're talking about guys pitching on a week's rest, which isn't ideal. So it's going to be fluid, I think. They have a lot of options right now with starters. This is kind of what they envisioned in the offseason with a lot of options and guys who are pitching well. You know, the starting rotation was a mess in April, but in May it's been very good. So, I think the first hurdle will be McCullers on Friday night, see how well he does, and then go from there.
Okay, so I want to talk a little bit about Jose Altuve, because I'm to the point now where when I watch him, I'm like, okay, he's been in the league long enough. I think he's in his fifth full season, and he's been awesome for every season. So it's no longer that we can say, well, you know, he's still young in his career. He just turned 26 recently, and so now I think we have to look, okay, he's in his prime years, and he is just like an amazing baseball player. So I've seen several graphics on the local TV broadcast comparing him to Pete Rose, just where they are at age 26, where they have been through 700 games for each. And I love it, because really to have a guy come up and be compared to Pete Rose, it has to be a guy that doesn't strike out a lot, doesn't walk a lot, and just gets a lot of hits, is not a home run hitter. So what we're seeing in Jose Altuve, I mean, is really pretty special, wouldn't you say?
Oh, yeah, I think it is, and you're right. We're a good, four or five years into his career now. So, you know, this is what he is, and he's still getting better. He's added that little power touch this year, hitting the ball to right field more. But, yeah, I saw those charts as well, comparing him to Rose and Robbie Alomar, and then about a week ago I did some comparisons with Biggio through 697 games for both of them, and Altuve was way ahead of his numbers, and he's about 2 years younger than Biggio was at that time. So he's on – it's early, but he's on a Hall of Fame arc in his career. I mean, if he continues to produce like this for another 6-7 years, he's knocking on the door of being one of the elite guys of all time and putting up some pretty gaudy numbers offensively. And he just got, you know, we've talked about it a lot. He's got great bat control. He plays hard, you know, hitting at the top of the order. He's swinging at good pitches now. You know, when he came up early, he was swinging at everything, and he's growing. I mean, he's 26. He's growing still as a hitter, and it's scary to think that he still might get better, but he's one of the top 3 or 4 hitters in the game right now as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, just the fact that he's already had 200-hit seasons in his first 5 years, and the Astros before him had one in their history,
yeah.
And that was Biggio.
Yeah.
I mean, it's sacrilegious maybe to say this. I just said this to somebody the other day, that he's, as right now, he's a much better player than Biggio.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just amazing to see what he could become, and it's mind-boggling to me if he stays on this pace that he would hit 3,000. He would get to 3,000 hits in his age 37 season, possibly 38, which is totally attainable.
Totally, and you know, and he's very driven and motivated, and you know, and I think he's. The guy that's going to take care of himself. He's going to get tons of at-bats and tons of opportunities. And like Biggio, who was only hurt that one time when he had the knee injury in 2000, I guess it was 2000.
2000, yeah.
Yeah, but other than that, he was healthy his whole career, and so he was able to get a lot of at-bats and plate appearances. I think Altuve will be the same way, and I think he's the kind of guy that as long as he's playing at a pretty high level, if he has a chance to get some of these landmarks, he's going to go for it. And I think in, you know, 10 years, we'll look at the Astros record books. It's going to be Altuve and up there with Biggio, Berkman, Bagwell, and Cedeno and Cruz and those guys. He's going to be in that kind of elite company, if not sooner.